a culture war going on in this country, we can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBerge, and this is The Reconnect, where we are seeking to put God back in his place where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So I'm going to invite us today to think about what we're thinking about, to seek to gain God's perspective on the news of the day, in order that we can be an ambassador of that perspective in our conversations with others. So we always invite you to connect with us on our website, reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can always let me know what you're thinking about on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBerge. Hashtag Carmen Talk. So I know that there are days when we talk about those things that divide us, but today I want to bridge a gap that I think doesn't exist so much as we perceive it to exist, and that is the distance between religious communities and religious believers and the scientific community and science. And so we're going to talk today with a scientist who actually helps to bridge the gap between science and religion. We're joined by Dr. Jennifer Wiseman. She's an astrophysicist. She's the director of the Dialogue on Science, Ethics, and Religion program for the American Association for the Advancement of Science. She speaks on this issue widely, and she writes about it. She enjoys giving talks on the excitement of science and astronomy at schools and youth and church groups and civic organizations. And the website that I'm going to direct you to is called perceptionsproject.org. That's perceptionsproject.org. Dr. Wiseman, welcome to the Reconnect.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So we are always trying to reconnect the eternal with the everyday, and it sounds to me as if in astrophysics, when you're talking about the birth of planets and where things come from, you're kind of interested in a similar conversation. Certainly the work you're doing is seeking to bridge the gap between the scientific and religious communities. So tell us what you have found in your travels and in your talks and in your research about evangelicals and their perceptions of science.
Sure. Well, you know, science and technology actually touch just about every aspect of our modern life these days, whether we're really consciously thinking about it or not. But, you know, everything we do, the food we eat, the smartphones we use, our health care, our education, just about everything we interact with has some connection to science and technology these days. So it is really kind of a misnomer to think that, you know, science is over in some separate compartment from the rest of our lives. And so it is very important that all people in society kind of think about how science and technology intersect with the larger values and priorities that we have. So this larger program that I represent is an effort from the scientific community to reach out and engage with religious communities to have really a better conversation about what's going on in science and how it impacts modern life. So that is why this program of dialogue on science, ethics, and religion was started about 21 years ago by this very large scientific society. I've been working with it for about 6 years now, and I just have found it very rewarding because I think there's a tremendous thirst out in society to have better conversations about science and the implications. And in particular, when I talk with different religious faith communities, both Christian communities and other faith traditions, I don't find antipathy towards science as much as I find deep interest in what the scientific discoveries are telling us that are interesting. They're both, some of them are both philosophically interesting when we kind of think of the larger questions of the enormity of the universe, those kinds of things. And some of them have very practical implications. For example, when we learn things about the human body that can affect our medical care, or the human brain that affects how we understand human behavior in a kind of compassionate and pastoral setting, These things are very helpful. When we learn about the environment, it can help people who are involved in mission work to be better able to serve those who live in communities where environmental degradation is really causing them deep problems. So a quicker answer to your question is that I think I've learned that people are truly interested in science and its implications, and that includes people in faith traditions as well.
So from a perspective of a person in a faith community where maybe science and science-related questions have not historically been welcomed or encouraged, and when they've been asked, they've been answered in ways that, you know, for young people today in particular, or people who have been, let's say, educated not just through K-12, but have gone on to universities and maybe graduate schools, and they've been exposed to lots of information that goes beyond what religious leaders might be prepared to interact with. So how are you guys equipping religious leaders to more positively engage when people ask questions in a religious community context to sort of invite the conversation instead of squelch it?
That's a great question. So I'll tell you a couple of projects that we have. First of all, we're part of a scientific society, so we don't try to influence, for example, the theological beliefs of any particular religious community. But what we do is try to make sure that interested religious communities, that can be pastors or people who are involved in their congregations in leadership roles, have a chance to be more aware of what actually is going on in science these days, to be kind of more current in what the discussions actually are, not just what was the science 20, 30 years ago, but what's actually forefront in science, and thereby being a little more knowledgeable when these conversations come up in congregations. We, as a science society, do this by offering what I call the architecture to bring scientists and religious communities together to talk about hot topics in science. One of our projects, for example, is our Science in Seminaries program. That's another website, Science. Let me make sure I get that.
Science for Seminaries.
Science for Seminaries. .org, where we are working with 10 pilot seminaries of various traditions. These are all within Christian traditions, who really want to incorporate more science exposure in the training of pastors within their own tradition. So again, we don't get into the theology of these seminaries, but what we provide for these seminaries is exposure and connections to the hot science, and then they can figure out where it fits in best into their course structure and so forth. I think what we sense from a lot of people in religious communities is that they really want to think of science in a more positive way. A lot of times people are exposed in their church communities to science either as kind of some sort of an alien or even an enemy concept, or else that it's irrelevant. And I think both of those things are untrue. I mean, science really has had a strong relationship with religious faith for centuries, and in fact, many of our what we call our founding fathers and mothers in science were people of deep religious faith themselves. They were inspired by their faith to do science, and some of them did it explicitly as an act of honoring God. Now, not all scientists have that motivation today, but some do. So, I think it's important to know that scientific research can be seen as a very positive aspect of living out one's faith convictions, just discerning the truth of the natural world as one piece of a larger body of values and understanding of truth. So that's one thing I've learned. Another is that people are thirsty to hear about a broader range of scientific topics. Often when the words science and religion come up, everyone immediately thinks of these age-old discussions of things like evolution and origins, and those are very indeed central topics to a lot of modern science. So we're happy and encouraging for people to have constructive conversations about these things. But there are many other very interesting, pertinent science topics that people in congregations are very eager to learn about, such as neuroscience. We're learning a whole lot about how the human brain works and processes information and what kind of guides maybe our sense of who we are and decision making and so forth. That's really important to learn in its own right, but it's also helpful for people who are compassionate leaders of other people to understand a little bit better how we work. Genetics, genetics is a hot topic now. It tells us something more about ourselves. So exactly what does that tell us, and how much? How much are we shaped by our genes as opposed to or in complement to our environment, and how, how we interact with our environment? Those are very hot topics that are important. People in faith communities especially are interested in that kind of topic. What about environmental stewardship? Many people in faith communities are very concerned with caring for creation, for being good stewards of the planet, good garden keepers, some would call it. And yet there are so many environmental challenges today that it's important to have good science, good information to know how to make the right choices on how to care for the environment, in particular when looking out for communities, impoverished communities or developing communities around the world, and trying to be co-partners with them in mission work. So these are the kinds of breadths of topics that religious communities often thirst to talk about, but often don't have a kind of a leg in or a way to engage in those types of conversations and getting better information. And that's where we try to play a role.
Absolutely. Hey, friends, you're listening to The Reconnect. We're talking with Dr. Jennifer Wiseman. She's an astrophysicist and the director of the Dialogue on Science, Ethics, and Religion. And you can learn more about all of that at it's three A's, AAAS.org. And Dr. Wiseman, you surfaced so many issues in the answer to that question, and so I want to circle back on a couple of them, and just to celebrate one of the places where your science for seminaries is having an impact in a place that I'm aware of, because it's my alma mater, and that's Princeton Seminary. There, they've started a farminary program, so it's like seminary, but you also learn agricultural practices and methods. You actually learn farming techniques, and it's very much about bringing science to bear on theology and theology to bear on science in relationship to all of those places in the world where people do grow their own food. And so, which, is a huge part. It's actually more of the world than those of us who live in places where most of our food comes from the grocery store. So I just, I think there are really great tangible examples of where the interaction, a very healthy interaction of science and the scientific community with the religious community, and particularly with developing religious leaders. So I think the seminary is a great place for this engagement to take place. Kids ask questions about science and science-related things all the time, and so parents as well need to be equipped in our churches and in other environments to speak about the science that our kids are asking about, and we need to then be equipped by our churches in a way that we can do so from a position of faith. And so, as you say, you guys are bringing the science to the table. It's the responsibility of those in the church and other religious communities to bring the theology to the table. But the point is, we got to come to the table together and talk about these things. And I need to learn from the scientific community what the current science is, because science really is not a settled business, is it?
No, science is a method of investigation, of kind of looking at the natural world. And so it's almost kind of, it's really more of a verb than a noun, in a sense. And so I think it really is important that people understand the value of science. Now, a lot of people are rightly concerned when science in our popular society gets elevated almost to a religion of its own. We would call that scientism, where there's a sense that science will eventually answer everything about everything, and you don't need any other input into your life. And that really isn't pure science. That's a philosophy that most scientists actually would not agree with, but it is out there. So it's that kind of thing. You have to kind of tease apart sometimes the loudest voices, as we all know, on any end of a spectrum can get the most media, but they don't necessarily add the most light to a conversation. So I think really what's needed in congregations is better information, but also a sense that it's okay to ask questions, and it's okay to say, hey, we don't know all the answers, but let's investigate. We don't need to be afraid. We need to be kind of driven and excited. I know in my own field of science, which is astronomy and astrophysics, there's so many wonderful discoveries of late that just beg for more scientific study, but also for just a sense of wonder and awe. And I think that's another aspect of scientific exploration that can be brought into congregational life, which is a sense not only of humility, but also a sense of just wonder and awe about what we're now being able to learn, both on the very large scale with telescopes, and also on a very small scale, looking deep not only within the human genome and the genome of other animals, but also at the atomic and subatomic scale. We're allowed with these new technological developments to see the natural world with new eyes, if you will, and to see and learn a lot of things that people for all of human history have never known or seen before. So I think we should consider scientific discoveries as a wonderful gift, something to be grateful for, something to take time to let it instill a sense of wonder, awe, and praise in our congregations. And then of course, deciding what we do with this kind of information as a next step. So I think developing an atmosphere of appreciation for scientific knowledge and open discussion and comfortableness with the fact that not everyone may agree on certain implications of science or what we do with the information, that kind of thing, but leaving space for people to talk and think about these things is a wonderful gift that a congregational leader can give to the congregation.
I think that for folks who are listening, this would be such a fresh approach to conversations in some religious contexts where there's no small measure, maybe the word is fear, maybe it's just resistance, and maybe it's simply a lack of feeling well enough informed to engage in a conversation. And so I think that this idea that we're going to be open to questions, we're going to encourage wonder, we're going to understand that science is as much a method as anything else, and that it's a method of asking questions. And we should welcome that. I mean, that should be something that, from a faith perspective, we welcome. We shouldn't squelch the questions that people ask. We should wonder with them what the answers might be. It would give us an opportunity to walk with people in the places and in the areas where they're genuinely interested, instead of, well, this is just, you know, me talking to my people now, always trying to force fit something that we want to say into the conversation space. So, hey, folks, let me just remind people that they're listening to The Reconnect, and we are joined today by Dr. Jennifer Wiseman. She's an astrophysicist, and you can find some great information. In fact, I recommend you go to the Perceptions, that's plural, perceptionsproject.org website, because one of the things you'll find there is a resource called Same World, Different Worldviews. And as a member of the board of the National Association of Evangelicals, this is a resource people ought to have in their hands and something they ought to use. But Dr. Wiseman, go ahead. What were you going to say there? And I cut you off.
Well, that's okay. I wanted to mention that one of those most helpful resources that churches and congregations can bring in these conversations of science is, in fact, people who are already in their congregations or their communities who are involved in scientific careers. A lot of times churches don't realize that they have scientists even in their own midst, or even in their, or at least in their local community, who's happy to come and start conversations in classes or study groups. One that this is an unaffiliated website from my own work, but I think it might be useful in this context, is a website called scientistsincongregations.org. Scientists in Congregations is a resource site that helps congregations be able to either bring scientists in if they don't identify any in their own congregation or community, or at least use resources that other congregations have developed talking with scientists of their own faith tradition. And I think that's helpful if you can find someone who's knowledgeable and practicing in science who understands your own faith convictions and is respectful and appreciative of them. So that's one resource. Also, the American Scientific Affiliation, that's not related to the AAAS organization, but the American Scientific Affiliation is a network of Christians in scientific fields, and their website has a lot of resources as well. So the people connection, person to person, I think is helpful in this context too, instead of just concepts in a kind of abstract way. This is one of the things we explored at from our science society's perspective in this Perceptions Project that you've mentioned a couple of times. The Perceptions Project was an effort to bring scientists and religious leaders, in particular evangelical pastors, together to spend a day and a half in different cities in the U.S., not trying to hammer out particular issues regarding faith and science, but rather to get to understand each other's interests and concerns better, as human to human. So we had workshops in Southern California and in the Denver area, and Atlanta, and various other cities, Washington, New York, where we did bring a small group of interested science leaders from local research universities together with pastors from local churches and other ministry leaders in that community. And it was so interesting because, A, these people wanted to come, and, B, they were very effusive after the experience about how rewarding it was just to get to meet and greet people that, even though they were living in the same geographic community, they were living in different worlds, in a sense. They really never had a chance to overlap in any meaningful way. And to find out that maybe the stereotypes that they had of one another were not accurate. Scientists found out in many cases that what they had assumed to be the kind of anti-science stance of religious leaders, in particular evangelicals, was not really quite accurate. And then likewise, the religious leaders and pastors learned that, hey, the scientists actually have deep moral and ethical concerns, and they are quite interested in hearing other points of view. So these were basically bashing some of the stereotypes that were a barrier to having better dialogue between scientists and religious communities. We even took the whole group on field trips. We took everyone to a religious setting, like a seminary or a church, just for a few minutes, and then we took the whole group to a science lab, a working science lab. And these field trips themselves were life-changing for these people, because many of them had imagined what these places might be like without having ever gone, and yet we provided that portal. So once again, the bridge between science and religion, in large part, might be building a bridge between scientists and religious people and churches and so forth. And that's where I think both churches and the scientific community can play a better role in building those person-to-person bridges. And, of course, these are overlapping communities. There are quite a few scientists who themselves are very devout in their faith and active in their faith community.
Dr. Wiseman, thank you so much for joining us today on The Reconnect. We'll be posting the information that you have shared with us today via our social media and on our website, reconnectwithcarmen.com. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, and let me just add that I hope that people listening will also encourage young people in their lives to consider science and engineering and technical fields as a wonderful way forward. So thank you for having
Absolutely.
Me on the program
thank
today.
You. Hey, friends, we got to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We're going to have a conversation in the second half that you don't want to miss. Visit the website, reconnectwithcarmen.com. We'll be right back. LaBerge, and this is the Reconnect, where we're putting God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So we're talking about what people are talking about, and we're talking with the people who are talking about the things that we want to be equipped for as ambassadors of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. And we certainly want to be declaring indeed that Jesus saves. We invite you to connect with us online. The website is reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can like us on Facebook and let us know what you're thinking about. On Twitter, I'm at Carmen LaBerge. All right, friends, we have an opportunity to talk again today with Trillia Newbell. She is an author and a speaker, but I think more importantly than anything else, She is a woman who, when you meet her, the spirit is like leaping out of her. My best description of her is that she is radiant. She is a person who, she actually physically personifies joy. And so of all the people in the world who were in a legitimate position and have like legitimate personal authority to write a book about what it actually looks like and means to enjoy all that God has given us, to spend our life actually enjoying God, Trillia is one of the only people that I could imagine being in a position, a legitimate position to do this. The book is Enjoy, Finding the Freedom to Delight Daily in God's Good Gifts. Trillia is the Director of Community Outreach for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, and you can follow her on Twitter at Trillia Newbell. Trillia, welcome back.
Hey, thank you. Such a kind introduction. Wow.
Well, it's who you are, and so I just grant that it's who you are. So every author has like an itch that they're trying to scratch when they write a book.
Right.
So what's the backstory of this book?
The backstory, I think, would be, it's interesting. I've actually gone through various trials, and the Lord has been gracious to help me be sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. So I am writing this not from a position of happy-go-lucky, but from the real position. Okay, life is hard. How do we enjoy and endure knowing that God is making all things new, but we have to wait? So that the backstory is really just from my own life, how God has helped me endure various trials and endure with joy and enjoy the good gifts that he's given me.
And I think, Trillia, that is, I mean, that's such an important word for today, because people know that life is hard. People know that life is difficult. They know they're stressed. You know, they feel an economic pressure. They feel the pressure
right.
of all kinds of social issues and challenges. And they feel the tension of wanting to be a joyful Christian and yet recognizing that our sisters and brothers are persecuted around the world. Like,
right.
I know that there's like immediate pushback when I see this book sitting on a shelf and I say, you know, I'm being invited to be free, to find the freedom to actually enjoy God's good gifts. I want you to set me at liberty to do that.
Absolutely. Well, there's two problems with the things that you just described. One is we can and should mourn and weep. So it's not bad to mourn and weep, but God does also command us to be content and to rejoice always and to pray without ceasing. So what we need to ask ourselves is, are we weighed down with guilt? Are we allowing ourselves to enjoy and delight, or are we so weighed down with guilt that we actually aren't recognizing any of the good things that God has done? Number two, or what we could do is idolize. So we can think this world is it. That's often, I think, when we are complete despairing is because we don't see the hope before us. And so we can idolize this world, or we can idolize our things. So the market crashes and our world is destroyed. Yes, we can grieve, but if we have placed our hope and trust in money, then yes, we will be destroyed. But if we place our hope and trust in the Lord, then we can know that he is working all things to the good of those who love him, and we can rejoice. We can be sorrowful, yet always rejoicing in our hope, not rejoicing in a fake, like, oh, but rejoicing in our hope. But there are times for mourning and weeping, and there are times for singing and dancing. And what I hope is that people will see that they are free to enjoy and to rejoice. The Lord rejoices over us, which is with singing, which is remarkable, isn't it? When you know us, it's remarkable. So there's freedom in. And I do believe it as image bearers, it reflects our God, who's given us his image. He says he's created us in the image of God.
Well, and when you sort of
identify it as we're either sort of paralyzed in failing to recognize the peace that passes all understanding and the secret of being content, or we're idolizing this life and the things of it. You really get at the issue, which I think is at the center of this, which is worship.
Yes. Amen.
So, So talk with us about that, this component of worship.
Yes. Okay. So in the book, I am actually pointing us to the Lord. And really, if we, when we look at something like a rabbit or a piece of chocolate.
A chocolate rabbit? What? Okay. I'm with you now. I'm tracking. I'm with you. I got my chocolate rabbit in mind. Go.
We can rejoice in knowing that, one, God, he created, for example, the rabbit. He created the rabbit. And he is so unique and so creative that he would create an animal like a rabbit, and that we can enjoy and delight in it, in viewing it, in keeping it safe, however the Lord, depending on our situation and where we are. But it doesn't point to, oh, just anything, but it points directly to the Lord, that Lord is the creator of the universe. And it's fun because I have two children, and I'm able to do this with a number of things. We can talk about our food. Hey, there was someone who labored. They were working, and they made that food. We thank God for creating this person who can make this food that we can now enjoy. But it started somewhere in a garden, or it started somewhere in a factory. And these are people who, so there's layer upon layer upon layer of where we can point to the Lord and be grateful for what we have. And so ultimately, though, if we want ultimate satisfaction, it must be in him. So as we are delighting and enjoying, ultimately we delight and enjoy the Lord. And that's the aim of the book, is to point us, if we're idolizing people in relationships, for example, then we have placed those people in God's place. And so we want to love people but not idolize them. And that way we can love them rightly. You can't love someone rightly if you're trying to worship them, because they're not going to give you what you need. Only God can. And
absolutely,
that's what I point to. Yeah.
Well, and I suspect that the chief end of man being to glorify God and enjoy him forever is finds its way somewhere into the conversation of the book. And I have in mind, when I think about you speaking this truth, which you live this joy. And when I think about you speaking this into the lives of some of our young Reformed friends who are super serious and they're very fixated on glorifying God, and I totally appreciate that, but sometimes they miss the joy. And so I'm thankful that you are helping us not miss the joy. And I have a person to tell you about. His name's Mike Cook. He teaches in rural Rabun County, Georgia, and he teaches math. And he teaches math to kids who really, you know, like, don't see the use of having this kind of math education as they get older. And
sure.
So he put over the door of his room, when they enter the room and when they exit the room, it just says, "Don't forget the joy." And I feel like that's the banner that you're putting over us. I feel like you are, you know, you're lifting a banner up and you're saying, you know, taste and see that the Lord is good.
Yes.
And we are to enjoy him. Yes, we're to glorify him. That's hugely significant. But we're also to enjoy him, to delight in him. And so I genuinely appreciate that. Folks, the book, which you can find on Amazon. It's easy to find. You can actually go to Trillia's website, trillianewbell.com, and you can find it there. But you can also go to Amazon and find it. It's Enjoy, Finding the Freedom to Delight Daily in God's Good Gifts. Hey, Trillia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a joy.
Have a blessed afternoon.
You too.
All right, friends. So where do you find your joy? You know, here's the reality of being in a relationship with the living God. If you are going to glorify God, you've got to know who God is and what brings him glory. And you have to have a life given over to the purpose of worship. And you say to yourself, you know, I am really busy. I have got a lot on my agenda. The new year has just started. I'm driving towards some particular agenda items and some tasks and some resolutions. I've got a to-do list. And if God gets glorified in the midst of that, well, good for God. Well, this is not the intentional variety of relationship that we want to be called into this year. Right? We want to be called into the kind of intimate relationship with God that in which we actually delight in him. We actually know God well enough and are with God often enough and are near enough to him that we get to enjoy, participate in the joy. It's like being encouraged, right? You are participating in the courage of another. That's a person who comes alongside you. They bring their courage. And when you are encouraged, it's because you're brought into their courage. Okay, the same happens here. To enjoy God means that we're actually brought into the joy that is God. Because he is good, and he is beautiful, and he is true. And he is love, and he is pure, and he is holy. I mean, the list is long. How are you going to be sure that you are with God, near enough to him, that you can actually revel around in his joy, that you can delight in him? So that's my encouragement to you. This is much more about personal worship. This is about personal opportunities to be in the presence of the living God as his creature, as his redeemed child, and simply enjoy the fellowship that you have with the living God. That is actually the real life, the abundant life that Jesus died to give you. That's it. It is genuine fellowship with the Father. That's the heart of Christ for us, to be in an actual restored relationship with God, wherein we walk with him in like Adam and Eve did in the cool of the day in the garden, where we are actually with him as his creatures, as people created in his image, as people who know him. For there's this relationship of love and joy and peace. Don't you want some of that? I want me some of that. So the invitation, Julia, is to enjoy God, actually find the freedom to enjoy the goodness of God and the good gifts of God in every moment of every day. So again, it's Trillia Newbell is the author. The book is Enjoy, Finding the Freedom to Delight Daily in God's Good Gifts. All right, friends, it's time to go below the fold. This is the point in the show where we like to lift up stories and make connections that, well, on the surface, they don't appear to be about God. But the idea here is that these are things that people are talking about out there in the world. These are conversations that are already being had. Maybe they're cultural conversations. Maybe they're conversations about movies, things that are happening in the world, people who are, you know, winning big awards or whatever. And we're going to take the conversation that's being had and we're going to help you see that through an eternal perspective and help people actually reconnect the eternal with the everyday in the context of these cultural conversations. So today's cultural conversation comes to us from the New York Times. The character, the person involved, his name is Farrell Williams, and the title of the article is Making Noise for Hidden Figures Everywhere. Okay, so Hidden Figures is a film, but the film tells the story of these real-life mathematicians. They happen to all be African-American, and they happen to all be women. Their names are Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson. They worked at NASA during the space race in the 1960s. Now, not all of us are old enough to remember the 60s, but all of us certainly are well aware of the history of what was going on in the 1960s in relationship to race in America. not the space race here. I'm talking about racial tension, racial segregation between whites and blacks in the United States of America. And so this is a really fascinating story about these three African American women who worked for NASA, who are mathematicians. No spoiler alert necessary here because I haven't seen the film yet. But these are the hidden figures that are actually behind the success of NASA's advance during this time period. So Pharrell Williams, the reason that he is highlighted here in this story is because he's really the guy who I would say made this film happen. He grew up in the shadow of NASA there in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And so this is a story that was important to him. And Pharrell Williams is, he's kind of a ubiquitous character right now in music and in film and in art and in fashion. He's a guy that if you're paying attention to culture, he's out there. He's on the forefront of culture. And so when he is interviewed about why it was important to make this film, and in particular the music for the film, he talked about growing up in the shadow of NASA and why this project was important to him. Now, the project's important to him on several layers. So I'm going to talk about the NASA layer, and then I'm going to talk about the racial conversation layer as well. So he says this, growing up, there was kind of a mystical reverence for NASA. Quote, "We knew the bigger questions were being answered there," he said. "The idea that there's something beyond this planet that goes on forever in any direction. Come on. The idea that our sun is just another star, that all those stars have exoplanets around them right now, that is mind-blowing for me. And it was mind-blowing for me as a child." Why do I lift up this story? Because here is a person who's not a person of faith based on what he says in the rest of his interview. But here is a person who absolutely, like all of us, like every person, is amazed, finds themselves amazed at the reality of the expanse of the universe and the mysteries of it. And you and I know the God who created it all. You and I actually know the God who holds the universe in the equivalent of the palm of his hand. We know what's beyond everything that can be seen and that which cannot even yet be seen. And we know the one who answers the bigger questions. And we know that those questions aren't ultimately being answered by NASA. So there's an entry point to conversation here with cultural people. Because this is a great stepping off point. Any time that you talk about the depths of the sea or the mysteries of space or the places of the human heart and the human mind that cannot be plumbed, you are talking about the home field for people from a Christian worldview. You're talking about stuff that the world cannot explain, but which frankly we don't find all that mysterious. Okay, this conversation goes on with Pharrell Williams, and in it, he talks about how he was drawn into this film. So he says, "The universe was warming up my mind. The universe was warming up my faculties to prepare me to be able to write songs that spoke for it. The universe just took me by the hand and walked me." Okay, people, the universe doesn't have a hand with which to walk you. The universe cannot warm up your mind. The universe cannot prepare you to do anything. The universe is not a person. But there is a personal God who is real, who does warm up to the human heart, who does inspire the human mind, who does take the human by the hand. You see that Pharrell Williams is very much desiring to have a relationship with the universe. Well, the universe is an impersonal reality. What he's longing for, and yet doesn't know that he's longing for, is a relationship with a personal God. Now, who is in a position to have that conversation with this individual? I don't know. I don't know who is close enough to this individual to take the step from the conversations he is having about the universe and about hidden figures and the conversation that he could be having with the God of the universe who is revealed. Hidden Figures is a great movie title. It's a great story. My guess is it's also going to be a great opportunity for those of us who are Christians to engage with other people in substantive conversations about the universe and who's beyond it and who's responsible for it and who created it. And to have conversations about the very significant issue that is raised in this film. In the 1960s, to be a black woman in America was not vaunted status. And yet these women, these NASA mathematicians, I mean, essentially saved the space program. They essentially made the American space program what it is in terms of the space race at that time globally. All right, so Hidden Figures is a story about which Pharrell Williams cares because he talks about the narrative, the very pro-male narrative that dominates our society. And I think that if he had been pressed, he would be talking about the very white narrative that tends to dominate our society. His quote is this: "There needs to be a narrative that is shared by both men and women. The female contribution can be hid no more." This gives us an opportunity actually to talk about the created nature of humanity. It was male. It was in the image of God that God created them, male and female. The narrative has always been shared between men and women. The narrative of who we are as image bearers of God is a shared narrative. And so to have the opportunity to point to that is probably the way that you and I should be entering into the conversation of the day related to gender. Right? There are opportunities here for us as Christians to engage the cultural conversations about black and white and brown America and about men and women. Because as image bearers of God, we all share the imago Dei. There is no distinction in terms of creation and the God who made us and the universe in which we live. All right, folks, that's all we got time for today. Visit us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Sign up for the podcast. We'd appreciate it if you donate to the ministry. Share today's show with someone new. We'll see you right back here tomorrow. Have a great day, and God bless.
Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.